Could I just ask about the training of these troops in comparison to the French troops that they're up against? Are they well trained? Are they well officered?
Wellington said as early as about 1805, I mean, Wellington had fought in India from 1798 to 1805. He'd fought there. He came back to Britain in 1805. And he said on his journey back to Britain that the British soldier was the best soldier in the world after the French soldier. So already you've got that sense of pride. The argument of Wellington, and okay, he's looking at it from a particular perspective, was that the British soldier was extremely well disciplined, extremely well drilled, and was absolutely tenacious in battle. If you were in a fighting match, his argument was the British soldier would really stand and fight it out. Obviously, there are other arguments about the nature of the British Army. I mean, it was a volunteer army. It was not a conscript army like the French army, like the Prussian and then eventually the Austrian armies. And so it was difficult to get men to go into the army. I mean, if you look at recruitment, it's always quite difficult for the regular army to meet its targets. The view was, of course, Britain, okay, we're talking relatively, Britain was a high-wage economy. Relatively. I'm not saying people were terribly well paid, but they were certainly better paid than in most, well, all other European countries. So Britain's economy is quite a strong one. It's a diverse economy, strong in agriculture, strong in commerce, strong in industry. So there are plenty of job opportunities for most of the time. So it is actually difficult to get troops. So the argument generally is that the ordinary British soldier tended to be driven into the army because of low levels of skill, low opportunities, and sometimes by simply coercion. I mean, people got drunk and got to sign up, if you like. So the view was the ordinary British soldier was not very skilled, shall we say, but they were well drilled in military capability. But the one big difference between the British Army and the French, of course, was that it was extremely difficult for an ordinary soldier to be promoted to the officer ranks. And if you look at the French army in the 1800s, 1810s, a lot of these very senior people had started as sergeants under the monarchy and had risen because of the attack on aristocracy by the Republic in 1792, 1793 to 1795. This was impossible in the British army. Very, very rarely did anybody get promoted from sergeant to be commissioned as an officer. I mean, it did happen, but it was extremely rare, and nobody would rise to the rank of colonel or anything like that. And so this is an argument about a skill set, if you like. There was no upward mobility path. On the other hand, the officer corps in the army is really divided into different groups. There are guys who are commissioned, who don't have money, don't have connections, who serve in their regiments for their whole careers. They don't rise very high, but they are very, very dedicated to keeping the regiment going. There are other officers who basically can buy their commissions, can buy their promotion, who are younger sons usually, not always younger, but usually younger sons of affluent families whose families basically want to get them out of their hair. And so they put them into the army as some way of trying to keep them occupied, as it were. And some of these guys are obviously pretty amateurish and not very efficient. But there are others who are in the army who are very able, and because they're able to pay for their promotions up to the rank of lieutenant colonel, they can rise very quickly. And it means you do get some senior officers who are pretty young, like Wellington himself. And the argument is, of course, that that means that some of the senior officers are people who don't have to wait their turn. And you've got young people of talent who are in senior posts. And undoubtedly, there are a large number of officers who are, okay, they've bought their way up to the rank of lieutenant colonel, say by their late 20s, early 30s, but who are undoubtedly able and who are very committed to their profession. Wellington is the most outstanding example of that, but there are plenty of others. And I think what happens is, if you see what happens over the years, that when you do get an expedition like the Peninsular War, where the British are sending 40,000 men to Portugal and Spain, you get a sifting out process where the more lackadaisical, the more amateurish, get squeezed out. And you know, the people who are there on campaign tend to be pretty competent, pretty dedicated. And so if you looked at the sort of people who are majors and lieutenant colonels, in Spain by 1813, most of them have quite long military experience. They're not just jollying off to have a dash at the enemy and then go back to London. The problem arises if you're campaigning in what is today Belgium, Flanders, then that could happen. You send traps over, you know, just across the channel, and that amateur element is sometimes quite strong there. But it's not the core of the people who keep the army going.
So it's true to say that by the time we get to the end of the wars over Spain and Portugal, that the British army is quite an effective fighting force.
Yes,
for time.
Absolutely. And I've looked at the career patterns of quite a lot of people who are majors and lieutenant colonels in the army by 1813, 14. And these guys have mostly got long experience. They've been at it for years on many campaigns, either in the peninsula itself or on these little expeditions. The British sent to the West Indies, and obviously they went to Egypt in 1801 and so on. So you've got a kind of selecting process going on there by experience. It's not an amateur thing. And Wellington himself, okay, he's an extreme example, but I mean, he spent most of his life between 1798 and 1814 fighting campaign. Huge number of battles fought.